that the reclassification database means the database which contains Okay, but Ms. Amundsen, it's page 9 of working document 19. The reclassification database definition is in that definition source. Chairperson, then, if I may continue, the next consequential amendment going from that will then be on page 21 of the SIC document, paragraph J, that indicates the establishment of the National Reclassification Database of reclassified information that will be made accessible to members of the public. Chairperson, the next amendment will then be on page 48, that uses the status of use procedure, and there is the whole clause 21, that's new clause 21, old clause 24, to remove the whole clause. Chairperson, then the next one. Chairperson, the next constitutional amendment will then be on page 57, new clause 34, sub clause 2, in bold and brackets, are considered to be automatically declassified. Supposing of the removal of those words. Chairperson, and then also consequential amendment. The next consequential that we will ask to look at is going to be sub clause 6 of clause 34, that's also page 57, and that also relates to the automatically satisfied, and then also similarly on page 58 of the top there, sub clause 7. Chairperson, then on 58, also the bottom there, triple five, platform 4. And again, I will be instruction in with the bold and the bracket. This is a number to one that there's no automatic disclosure of the classified information to the public, and if the same information has been placed into the National Identification Database provided for in section 37. Chairperson, then on page 59,
Thank you.
written then on page 58 at the bottom. I've mentioned the clause 55, subclause 4, and then turn the page on page 59, the whole of clause 57 that relates to the establishment of the National Decapitation Database. That will then be the whole clause 57 of clause 59. Here's the map on page 59 and 60 of the document. Then here's a further constitutional amendment as a result of this one will be on page 84. In the constitutional provision, that's the old clause 49, new clause 58, and that will be in subclause 1, paragraph E, where it refers to the establishment of the National Decapitation Database. And Chairperson, then also on page 85, at the bottom, there's subclause 5, also confidential. Chairperson, that's what the proposal in the working document. Thank you.
Thank you. I do recall what happened. see the Ms. Boyce.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will now go to the committee proposal, working document 19, and I will first deal with national security. The first proposal starts on page 1, and the first proposed amendment will then be on page 2. That reads Roman figure 4, exposure of a state security matter to undermine the constitutional state in the Republic. And then at the Roman figure 7, to insert the words after violence, directed at overthrowing the constitutional system of government in the Republic. And then to insert in paragraph C, the words acts directed at undermining. So the word includes is then taken out, and after includes the words is inserted, acts directed at undermining. And then, Chairperson, there's a footnote at the bottom, and we just want the committee to just give us guidance on this. Cesar and I had a discussion this morning about whether we should have the words that does not include lawful political activity, advocacy, protest, or dissent also included. We were not too sure, and we would appreciate guidance from the committee on that particular aspect.
Yes, sir.
Sir, yes, we agreed to insert Mr. Mania's proposal, a D. And so will Ms. Smith.
No,
so will you.
Honorable Smith, the there was no clear agreement that you were in agreement with the ANC's proposal. And in addition to that, you also wanted the lawful political activity and protesting included. It was on that basis that I said that your proposal should be reflected separately, because if you reflected it in the proposal that the ANC had put forward, it would have meant that you had agreed with those things. And what we wanted was two separate proposals, because you had at one stage said, but we're so close to each other, can't we just thrust it out now? And what to save time, I said, no, put that in a separate proposal. And I'm not sure how your proposal was going to read, and I did write down there on my documents what the DA was proposing, but this was part of your proposal. Now, if you're saying you wanted to go as a D.
Okay. You're arguing that this is work in progress. We accept that. And although we all know that that particular subsection D was accepted, it is the case that there are further things that Mr. Mania wishes to argue. So on that basis, we accept that Cardinal and Cesar left it out for the moment. But we also understand amongst us that it was, in fact, that was in fact accepted.
So if we are to include that, then, is are we saying that that then is the definition that we are going to accept?
On the contrary, we are, it's a work in progress. We are still wishing to further argue other components of the definition. So I'm saying we accept the fact that D is not now reflected, although we all know it was accepted.
Honorable Landers, let me ask you a question. This proposal that is the subject matter of the discussion now, which reads, but does not include lawful political activity, and so on, you can buy that proposal for nothing and you can include it in the ANC proposal, in which case you will have a proposal that you may live with as the ANC proposal, in which case I'm not sure what further issues the Honorable Mania and Smuts want to argue. but you, because I'd just like to understand where are we with your proposal, the Honourable Landers and then the Honourable Santo, and then the Honourable Mania.
Chairperson, we are prepared to include the proviso. And with that proviso, Chairperson, we believe the definition of national security is complete. And we are ready to move on that particular matter. If Mr. Mania has other matters he wishes to raise, but he's quite free and capable of raising them, doesn't mean that we will necessarily agree with them. What we have in our proposal, Chairperson, as far as we're concerned, suffices.
You covered.
Thank you, Chair. If I recall correctly, last night we agreed that we would have a further opportunity to make a proposal on national security. Now, there are, if I recall correctly, there is one area of agreement which is to insert a new clause, sub-clause D, which would read, but does not include lawful political activity, advocacy, protest, or dissent. I'm just simply outlining. That is an area of agreement. There are three possible areas of disagreement. That includes the sub-sub clause on hostile acts of foreign intervention, the exposure of state security matter, and the exposure of economic, scientific, or technological secrets. We have drafted up an alternative proposal, which has been distributed, and through you, Chair, we would like to argue for further amendments, and we hope that the ruling party will consider those proposals.
Have the honourable members all got copies of this proposal? The Honourable Sili.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two things. One is substantive, the other one. It's a friendly amendment. The substantive one, I'm not going to repeat it. I'm personally in disagreement on the state security matter. I've stated my position. I don't need to repeat it. The other one, and I don't want to go up and down. It's just we're trying to make this better. And if there is value, what I would suggest to do is to just reorganize slightly the words where it says under A, the trait of, then you put one, use of force, and all the other acts come underneath. And before the word threat, you insert the words clear and present. The value of this simple amendment is twofold. First of all, it makes clear that all the acts referred to in B is the traits of this act, not the actual act. I mean, you one act before the act comes to pass. So it is a reaction to threats. So in that sense, it expands the definition in respect to all the aspects under B. But by inserting the words clear and present threat, brings it a little closer to an objective standard. In an environment in which every threat is always taken seriously, at times too seriously, no matter how speculative it could be. And we must not encourage that specific feature of the intelligence profession, and as it is the normal standard in other countries in the world and that submit best international practice, and the word clear and present trace will obviate to that specific problem. I hope I'm being clear.
Honorable members, there are two very different proposals now, the one coming from the Honorable Abrosini and the other one contained in the proposal from the Honorable Mania and the Honorable Smuts. Honorable Mania.
Thank you, Chair. If I could, through you, just briefly speak to the three areas of disagreement and the possible counter-proposals and solutions. Can I proceed, Chair? Chair, in respect of B1, we did have a discussion yesterday about the concept of hostile acts of foreign intervention. There was a disagreement about the meaning of the term, and the argument advanced by the Honourable Landers was that this meant the meaning of the term really covered war. Now we disagreed on this, but we accepted the ruling party are intent on maintaining the words hostile acts of foreign intervention, and so we have proposed in the alternate, a qualifier. So it would be it would read hostile acts of foreign intervention directed at overthrowing the constitutional system of government in the Republic. Chair, the second area of disagreement concerned the whole concept of state security matter, the so-called BOS clause. Again, we proposed a qualifier, and that would be it would read the exposure of state security matter with the intention of overthrowing the constitutional system of government in the Republic. We of course would prefer that entire clause to be deleted, but we propose, given the fact that the ruling party seem convinced that it ought to be in the definition, we propose the alternative. The final area of disagreement, Chair, is the whole question of economic, scientific, and technological secrets. We believe, for all the reasons I think argued very effectively by our colleague, the Honourable Swartz, last night, that this clause is overbroad, and we would propose deleting economic and simply narrowing the clause to read the exposure of scientific or technological secrets vital to the Republic. It would seem to me that that would also, at least to some extent, bring the language in line with the old 17.1J. Chair, these are our alternate proposals, and we hope that the ruling party will take some time to consider them and to consider further amending the definition of national security.
Honourable members, I really put my voice to what has been said. But on a proper understanding of the language, particularly to subclause Roman 4, the proposal is not exactly the same, does not carry the same meaning. So it's it's not merely just a change of words. The document that was presented by the ANC, the words read to undermine the constitutional state in the Republic. The alternate proposal says intention of overthrowing the constitutional system of government in the Republic. There is, in my understanding, a big difference between undermining and intention. So I'm not sure, honourable members, it seems to me that either there is a lightening up in the proposals presented by the DA is going to be accommodated or not. But am I to understand, honourable Landers, that notwithstanding what is presented on the proposals from the honourable Mania and Smut, that you still intend to include that lawful political activity clause?
Chairperson, it's not meant as a trade-off. We looked at it on its merits, and based on its merits, we've agreed to include it. But as to the rest of the motivation, it doesn't find favor with us, Chairperson.
May I request through you, the Honourable Landers, perhaps to react to my suggestion or my proposal?
The permission, Chair?
Yes, Honourable Land.
And neither does Mr. Ambrosini's proposal find favour, Mr.
The Chairman?
Yes, Honourable Ambrosini.
One has full appreciation of the ruling party's right and obligation to call the shots and rule. And everyone is respectful of the 66 mandate that the ruling party carries. So I don't question the right of the Honourable Landers to say we don't like it. But I want, in respect of one issue, impress on us all the fact that any aspect of democratic rule requires to decide and motivate. We expect that of any organ of state is not sufficient to say we don't like it. There is an issue that we have raised time and again in respect of state security matter, and I would wish to have an answer in terms of motivation. And the issue that we raised is that if a state security matter falls under 13 and 15, can be classified, and therefore the definition and the entire subject matter is useless. If it goes beyond 13 and 15, it goes beyond in a field which could be as open as possible, and it makes 13 and 15 useless. So much so, now that we have restricted the scope of application of the Act, effectively and primarily to those very agencies and organs of state to which state security matter would apply. So they could classify, close up anything which is not classifiable just because it relates to them. State security matter is that which relates to the agencies, even if it is their grocery list. Now, I've raised this issue. We have all raised it. We look at it as a contradiction, as an element of irrationality. And again, the ANC and the ruling party has the privilege to decide, but we would like to have at least an answer in terms of saying what is wrong with this argument, where is the fault of this thinking. Is what we find utterly irrational actually subject to some internal rationality, some motivation that we cannot detect?
Other
Thank you, Chair. I've heard the Honourable Landers, and it doesn't seem to me that he or his colleagues have spent much time considering our proposals. But having said that, I wonder if he would be prepared to explain why it is these three proposals do not find favour with the ruling party. And I would be particularly interested in why the proposal in Clause 4 particularly does not find favour. I cannot understand, Chair, how it is that this, the concept of security matter, finds favour with the ruling party, given the fact that it is a concept introduced in 1969 by Boss, borrowed from the security branch, and used under apartheid to prevent the media from publishing the names of people detained without trial, many of them from the ANC. I cannot understand it.
To respond, Honourable Landers?
Well, when my good intentions and my integrity is being impugned, then I do take offence. To say that it seems that I haven't taken time to consider the proposals by the opposition, that is offensive. Because you don't know how much time I've taken. You weren't with me. You didn't sit with me. No. Let me finish. So please don't point a finger at me and say you didn't take enough time, because you don't know how much time I took. That's the first point. So in future, when you make a proposal, I'll give it as little time as possible. And maybe that'll satisfy the processes that we are dealing with. Now, Roman 4. Presently, it reads as follows. Exposure of a state security matter to undermine the constitutional state in the Republic. To say that it is the same as what was contained in Lang Hendrik van den Berg's is incorrect. And for that reason, Chairperson, we are now becoming harder and harder about our definition, and we're now stuck with our definition. So please be careful when you point finger at us about our majority. Because I want to remind Mr. Ambrosini that the points he raises are not supported by his fellow opposition members. The clear and present threat he refers to is not covered in the DA's proposal, or by the Honourable Steve Swart, or anybody else.
Out of an amendment to the the Official Secrets Act in 1965, and it was used by the security branch to prevent the media publishing the names of people who had been detained without trial. It is a fact, and we are going to have to deal with that fact in this committee when we deal with the concept of security matter. And I would be very surprised if the Honourable Lady ends up retaining this clause.
Honourable Main, on your written document, you may be correct. I just want to correct something that you said. When you circulated this written document, I'm not sure, you say it was an hour ago, that could well be so. But yesterday, when the definition of national security was introduced by the Honourable Landers, you will recall I called for an amendment to the clause, and it was I that asked that clause 4, Roman 4, be considered to be amended, and I read out the words. I'm sure the Honourable Members can remember that. In response to that, you, Ms. Honourable Mania, had proposed similar words but something different. The words that you proposed then was very similar to what is contained in your document now. And it was in that context that the Honourable Smuts had said that we are close to each other. We almost have an agreement. So it is not correct that the Honourable Landers had for the first time seen these words in the document. He would have heard you. I actually wrote down your version of the words too, which was different, slightly different to mine. I thought I'd just draw that to your attention. The Honourable Abrasini first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two premises. First of all, I don't think that anyone in this entire process would question the integrity and commitment of the Honourable Landers. I think he has given an incredible proof of performance and dedication to this process. What one is doing here is doing our job. You know, we are all trying to do the best we can. One. Two, I never suggested I speak on behalf of anyone else in this committee but myself. And when I made the proposal about clear and open press, I made it on my behalf and did not suggest in any way that anyone else was supporting it. And I thought it would be considered on the basis of its merits as I motivated it. Where I did say that my position was supported, was not supported, we share a position, is in respect of state security matters. I asked today a question. I asked the same question before. And the question is, explain to us. This doesn't seem to be making sense. I mean, we don't see the rationale. And I'm not imputing motives. I'm not questioning integrity. I'm just saying that this question is not being answered. And I feel that it is the responsibility of any ruler, 66% or 99% majority, to explain decisions which are made when one cannot understand the rationale of it. Now, I accept that perhaps this is not the right time. I accept that perhaps the Honourable Landers and the ANC will provide a reason for what seems an incomprehensible decision, on account that if it is a classifiable matter, can be classified. If it is not a classifiable matter, we'll cover everything, potentially, which regards and pertains to those organs of state. But I would like to have an indication of whether at least I can expect an answer at the future juncture of these proceedings.
you don't have to answer now, Honourable Landers. You are invited to answer at a later stage if you so wish. Can I? We get to the proposal, Honourable Landers. I've got the Honourable Mainly and then the Honourable Gabbadet, or the Honourable Member there.
Chair, I just wish to say that I've checked and I submitted my proposal for the alternative definition of national security at 2:30 to Karen Boyson. All I'm asking is the ruling party consider our proposal and give reasonable time to this
point of order.
Chairperson, we're continuing with this argument. You quite rightly indicated that this matter was discussed last night. We might not have seen the written proposal, but clearly we remember that it was discussed last night. So I don't understand why the Honourable Mania continues, unless it is for the purpose of speaking to the audience, with this argument. We have discussed this matter last night. We have heard the Honourable Mania on this point last night. And whether he has submitted it 2:30 to the state law advisors or at 3:00, it really doesn't make a difference.
Just there's another point.
Chairperson, here we are not here to be forcefully obliged to argue matters that we think are not in our view. And we need to register to the opposition that if we don't agree with certain sentiments, it doesn't mean that we have anything against our colleagues. It is the view that we share ourselves as a party. And our colleagues should not insist in us discussing matters of interest in their view. They must accept that this is democracy. And if we don't agree with something, we don't agree with it. This thing of Honorable Ambrosini to say, to use even words that he's not supposed to use here, it's also uncalled for. We are a committee, and our work here is to come out with a legislation that will please all of us. If it doesn't please all of us, unfortunately, democracy will play its course.
Point of order, what words have I used that I'm not supposed to use here? I mean, this is a direct attack. I wish that this to be clarified.
You said we are bulldozing. Why do you pretend you don't know?
I've not used any such word. I've not used any such expression. I've not used the word bulldozing. It's not in my vocabulary.
You are a liar, Honorable Ambrosini.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, this is completely, it's unparliamentary to call somebody a liar.
Can you come to order?
Two members to order, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable members, we are not going forward, we are actually going backwards now. Honourable Mania, there seems to be no further reason why I should allow you to take that point further. I think Mr. Landers has made his point clear. The document, I can assure you, was discussed. Take it from me, I give it to you in good faith. Your points were discussed. I've heard it. And I've heard it reliably. And I think that is probably why the Honourable Landers is beginning to become somewhat disturbed. So just take it from me. It has been discussed. We are not going to go further on this point because it seems there is a deadlock. You have been useful in the sense that the Honourable Landers has seen fit to include Clause D, and I'm going to instruct the State Law Advisor to add Clause D to that committee working document after bracket C. But again, I want to remind you honourable members that many, many months ago, these things that you are now finding difficulty with, you had in fact agreed upon. We had a definition of national security, which we were very almost ready to shake hands on. It was just a question of peddlers that was some outstanding and there was a call to have another further presentation on the peddlers. And this clause that now seems to be the subject matter of much discussion, hostile acts of foreign intervention, which was right on top of our definition. We had gone through that and very carefully we had agreed that there was no problem at that time. Now I accept, as it was stated here yesterday, that things have changed and you wish to change your mind and you must be allowed to do that. But I think for the present purposes, I think, let us accept that this matter is going to be flagged and there can be no value in discussing this particular issue further. Honourable Swartz.
Say we were very close to a definition, the ACDP's position with the ANC, and the one outstanding issue at that time was the information peddling, but then subsequent 4 and 5 were added, and those were the two additions. But yeah, I'm not going to labour the debates. What I would ask us to look at, and that is our definition of hostile activity, which refers to, and just for consistency's sake, we use the same words as we use there. The verb is a matter of policy, undermine, change, whatever, but the word in our definition refers to the whether you want to say change, undermine, directed at, but the constitutional order of the Republic, I think we need to just keep that consistent, whatever we decide to use. Do you follow what I'm saying? So that we use a consistency there. And I think, Chair, it does raise the issue that you're very close, the parties are very close to one another here. Yesterday when I raised the issue of is a hostile activity the same as a hostile act? Because I think there's a difference. Hostile activity is defined and it sets it all out. And it says any activity aimed at changing the constitutional order of the Republic. And I think that's the sentiment that's coming out as we qualify each one of us. There's a slight emphasis difference from the ANC's position where they say to undermine and where the DA speaks about overthrowing. So there's a very closeness in the proposal, but I don't think we're going to take it any further. I think my plea is just to be consistent with the wording, whatever we use, that we use the same consistency through the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Well, amendments then, I think it's agreed at least that we move on. Can we move on to the state law advisory? Honourable Arnold? Sorry, you wanted to put a proposal, I forgot.
What the state law advisors are going to do now, because they've taken us through the document.
Finished. Oh. They just started. Ms. Poyser. So, there, on page 3 of your document is the proposal of the IFP, or rather of the Honourable Ambrosini, which for the same reason we will not go into now. Can we go on then to page 3, the bottom of where you deal with the application of the act?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask the committee to turn to page 4 that incorporates the proposal on the application of the act. It's on the top there, the new clause 3, and we inserted the discussion that was held yesterday, the provisions of this act with regard to the protection of valuable information against alteration, loss, destruction applied to all organs of the state, and then two, the classification, reclassification, and declassification provisions of this Act, A, apply to the security services of the Republic and the oversight bodies referred to in Chapter 11 of the Constitution, and B, may be assigned by the Minister on good cause shown by publication in the Gazette to any organ of state that applies in the prescribed manner to have those provisions applied to it. And then a proposal on paragraph B there. It will then read, may be assigned by the Minister on good cause shown by publication in the Gazette to any organ of state that applies in the prescribed manner to have those provisions apply to it and which can demonstrate that the information to be classified relates directly to national security.
Okay. grammatical improvement to mind, which is the second one, Chair. I think that it should read, may be assigned by the Minister on good cause shown by publication in the Gazette to any organ of state that applies in the prescribed manner and which can demonstrate that the information to be classified relates directly to national security, to have those provisions applied to it. I think it's in the wrong place. It should come in after the word manner.
Honourable Landers.
Chairperson, the application clause is fine as in the document. We do, however, want to make one small addition, and I'd like to motivate why and how this can be done. I'm going to use the Department of Science and Technology, which may have within the department a research and development division or unit. Now, what we're saying in this application clause then is if that research and development unit wishes that the stuff it is busy with should be classified, essentially then what this clause says is that the entire organ of state need to find a draft whereby a part of an organ of state is allowed to classify information as set out in the Act. And that would be the only change that we would ask the state law advisors to consider, Chairperson, because sometimes it's not the entire organ of state, it's not the entire department that would need to classify information, but a very small part of it. And in such an instance, the bill should make provision for that.
Mr. Chairman? I see the Honourable Smutsfors and then the Honourable Abrosini.
We express our support for the Honourable Landers.
Then the Honourable Abrosini and then...
I think all we need to do is just to bring back 3B. With the addition for purposes of this act, the old 3B. Determined part of an organ of state is to be regarded as a separate organ of state as specified by the minister. It's not what you're looking for. Honorable Landers.
Chairperson, what Mr. Andrusini is placing before this committee is pure gobbledygook. With apologies, I don't mean to be offensive, but when you read that clause, please tell me it makes sense to you. This doesn't make sense to me. There has to be a better formulation, a very simpler that elucidates the little problem that I have raised. 3B doesn't do that. 3B simply further complicates the matter and really stay far away from it.
Mr. Chairman, I guess there are two ways of batting this cherry. We can either enable a portion of an organ of state to apply on the opt-in clause, and that would be a little difficult because how does an organ of state, a portion of an organ of state speak, and how do you regard it? Or having the entire organ of state opting in, and then the minister determining that for purposes of this act, only a portion of it will be subjected to the act. But it's a matter of language. I'm sure the state law advisor can capture that in the most elegant and refined way.
Honorable Swart.
Chair, I suggest that it will be in the prescribed manner, and therefore the regulations can set out how that will take place. We would then have to, in the main body, to say to an organ of state or portion or sub-department or something, and then the regulation should say, in the case of a portion or a sub-department, this will be the process as prescribed. So it's a section, and that would be covered. And so that's a very useful suggestion to insert that. Is the proposal then, the second proposal, also acceptable, the underlined part?
Did I see a desire to talk here? Okay, no. I withdraw, Jefferson. Now, Honorable Landers, I haven't heard you on this the alternative proposal of B, which has got a demonstrate. You've got to demonstrate some stuff there before you can get on board.
Well, am I going to be accused of not having given enough time to it? So, should I rather not be asked to respond to it, say, tomorrow, Chiefs? Otherwise, I'll be accused again.
I wasn't trying to accuse you.
I'll be accused again, Chair, of just having given a few minutes to the matter, and lest we go back down that road, I'd rather respond to it tomorrow, Chiefs.
I would be, sir, too grateful to have his response at his convenience. And what I'm trying to achieve, I seek also his wisdom. There may be another way to say this. What I quickly wrote by hand last night was, and that these have to be organs or sections which can demonstrate that the information to be classified relates directly to the national security, but one could phrase it differently and say that they have to demonstrate, they have to convince the minister that what they wish to classify will comply with sections 13 and 15. Now, I mean, one accepts, I'm trying to think it through practically, one accepts that they will not be in a position to tell him between now and next year, here are all the things we think we'll have to classify, but they will presumably go to him and say, we are developing this, that, and the other at R&D Science and Tech. It is our view that is classifiable under 13 and will comply with the conditions for classification. That surely is what one seeks. And it seems to me that we want to go just a little further than on good cause shown, but I think it merits discussion. It's not a hard and fast position. Surely one wants to indicate that the minister mustn't allow this classification capacity until he is satisfied that the stuff really does need to be classified, i.e. that it complies with the conditions and the thresholds. That's all I'm looking for, sir. And would welcome counter proposals.
What did you want to be heard of? Honourable members, it seemed to me that the issue really is that at some stage a portion of an organ of state might conclude that this act applies to it, and at that stage it's going to make an application. The rest of the stuff is going to be in the regulation, what it has to do. I don't know why we need to say that they must demonstrate, but I'm sure the answer will come back tomorrow in the Honourable Landers' wishes. Because, I mean, at some stage, some organ of state is going to say, but if I look at this particular law, it seems that this thing, based on what I have, is applying to me. And I now need to make the necessary application. So the key thing is that the act is going to apply to a particular organ of state or a portion of an organ of state, and somebody is going to have to make that decision. I think that the minor details or the details itself is going to be filled in, and be it an affidavit or be it in a prescribed form, you're going to say, and you are then going to be looking at all the portions and say, in terms of 15 and 13, you know, if this thing escapes into the public domain, I see serious consequences for the country. in terms of national security. But Honorable Landers, I think from what I hear is that we are to ask, did you have a proposal for the state law advisor in terms of this part of the organ of state, or did you want me to instruct the state law advisor to look at something?
No, Chair, I didn't have a formal proposal that I'd written down. Simply the principle that the clause itself should include, whether it's by in a prescribed manner as suggested by the Honourable Steve Swart, or in a draft that the state law advisors can present to us, I'm quite happy to consider whatever is placed before us, Chair.
Ms. Boyce, do you get a very simple clause trying to cover the situation where only a section of a particular organ of state finds out that it needs that this act applies to it, and application is then made that the act applies to it? Can you look at giving us some simple wording to that effect? You see, it's the whole, not the whole, but the portion of the organ of state. So the process, is it the minister? Do they go to the minister, the relevant minister, and so forth and so on? And also keep in consideration what the Honorable Dean Smuts is saying, to demonstrate whether that is necessary, whether there is a, whether those things should go to regulations and so on, and can you then report back on this particular clause? Honourable members, I think we can move on. There's still a number of issues in this document that we need to deal with. Can you take us then to the next step, Ms. Poison?
Chairperson, the next proposal is on page 11. On the top there, clause 33, capital A, we were asked to consider the to provide for where a requester has exhausted the internal appeal procedure to incorporate that. So the clause will then read, a person who is aggrieved by a decision made with regard to a request for access to classified information may apply to a court for appropriate relief after the requester has exhausted the internal appeal procedure against the decision of the relevant minister of the organ of state in question. And then we took out the words, in the manner provided for in Chapter 2 of Part 4 of the Promotion of Access to Information Act.
Honourable members, page 11 of the thin document, right on top. To be very simple, nothing complex around it.
Chair, would Honourable Landers not consider putting back the words now bracket? Because it was purely as a result of my raising a certain point in respect of 2 sub B that he then says put a full stop after appropriate relief. But would he not now consider putting back the words struck out in bracketed? That is still what we mean. But why not? I mean, surely yesterday you wanted that process to be used, and then you decided against it.
Yes, Honourable Landers.
Chair, you see, you can't in one breath say that the legislature shouldn't dictate to the courts, and then in the same breath try to dictate to the courts. Yes, you argued convincingly that what is in prior is actually dictating to the courts.
We should amend that little.
Let me finish, please. All right? Now, if that is a risk, why take the risk? Right? Because you are sending this to the Constitutional Court, right? And you've announced over and over it's not going to pass muster. So, let's correct this now and leave out what is contained in Chapter 2 of Part 4 of PAYA.
My suggestion was that
leave
we amend it.
Now,
all right,
what
now
we've put in, let me finish. What we've put in there doesn't take away from what is in PAYA or anywhere else. It simply says anyone who is aggrieved is entitled to approach the courts. Now, there can't be anything wrong with that.
Yes, Honorable Swati.
Is the appeal, I'm just trying to understand, is the appeal to the head of the organ of state, which is the DG, or to the minister? So this is the relevant minister.
The relevant minister.
And that's the internal appeal process. Okay, thank you.
So, Honorable Members, does this go into the document by consensus?
The only outstanding question is whether we should have a section, a clause 46 at all. I said yesterday I thought we should, but I've been wondering, we'll talk over dinner. I've been wondering whether we need a clause 46.
We'll cross clause 46 when we get there. Honourable Member, can you come to order there? I don't know what you do at then, but Ms. Boyce, I don't know about the numbering. I don't like these A's because I understand for the purposes of this document, but for the purpose of the bill, we don't want to put in capital A's at the moment because it would sort of indicate that we are amending things, and you know, so you will find at some stage to give this thing a proper number in the order of things. But the instruction now is to include that clause into the bill. So you will go to the working document now, and you will find a place under appeal, and you would put that with a heading. In the working document. Is that understood, Ms.? And can we go on to the next?
The Chairperson, also on page 11 of the committee proposal document, clause 34, sub-clause 2 there. Chairperson, we've inserted the word subject to section 18, and section 18, if I may just ask the committee members to turn to, find it. It's on page 42 of the working document, the thick document that deals with the information that may not remain classified for longer than 20 years period unless the head of an organ of state that classifies the information certifies to the satisfaction of his or her relevant minister having regard to the criteria that the continued protection of state information from unlawful disclosure, and then those paragraphs there. That is why we've inserted the particular reference to section 18 in this particular sub-clause, Chairperson. So it will read, subject to section 18, at the date on which this act takes effect, public records, including records marked classified, that are transferred to the National Archives or other archives, must be declassified in accordance with Section 17, and Section 17 again refers back to the declassification, and that is on page 41 of the working document, Chairperson.
Honourable Members, we are dealing with the question of transferring your records now to the National Archives. That's what is happening here. And what the State Lawyer's Advisor has drawn our attention to is that you need to look at clause 17 and 18. Now, we are supposed to know those clauses. Of course, we have been busy with them. But I'm sure if you apply your mind to it, you'll find there seems to be no difficulty. You've got a footnote there, which I don't see. You want to explain, Mr.
Chairperson, it relates merely to the working document. Let me just get to the working document, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I may explain, what we intended is when we drafted the clause was to have the explanation of subsections or subject to section 18 to explain it in the footnote, but we've already incorporated the reference in subclause 2. So when I read the particular subclause, I explained to the committee why we've inserted subject to section 18. So the mere fact that there's a footnote, it refers just to the fact that you wanted to make a footnote to explain that.
Can you proceed then?
Thank you, Chairperson. The next proposal is then on page 12, at the top there, to bracket and bold subclause 6, where an organ of state fails to act in terms of part B of chapter 6, classified records in possession of the National Archives or other archives are regarded as being automatically declassified at the expiry of the relevant protection periods referred to in section 18.
You are on page?
On page 12 at the top of the committee proposal document, Chairperson. That's subclause 6.
Any objections to this being struck out, honourable members? It is then struck out. That's as it is done. I said, I says. Honourable members. Can you go on, Ms. Boyd?
Thank you, Chairperson. The next proposal is then on page 13. It's at the bottom there. It relates to the hostile activity offences, and it is clause 42, old clause 33, and the proposals are reflected on page 14, carrying over on 15, and it's reflected that it should read or prejudice the Republic in its national security and all those paragraphs thereafter.
Yes. I think it is premature that, but we will see why. It will flow from the opinion that we are waiting for, which the Honourable Mayor had asked for on Friday. He wanted an opinion from the
Fanara.
So I've summoned Mr. Fanara, and he's here with his opinion. And you will see from his opinion that, because they were working together, you will see from the opinion that this is a proposal that is.
Sorry.
For the purposes now, or you finish, Ms. Boyser?
Finished, thank you, Chairperson.
You finish with the document. So, there's nothing further in this document that you need to draw our attention to?
No, Chairperson.
Can we just, honourable members, on this clause that seemed to have creeped his way, that is got you all excited, can we then go to the Honourable Vanara? He is in a position to brief us, and it will be on the request that was made on Friday, that the Honourable Mania was not happy with the opinion that came from the state law advisor, because he had insisted that he had asked the Honourable, that the Honourable Vanara present that opinion. So can we go over to you, Honourable Vanara? I might just add, Honourable Vanara, Honourable Mania, that I did forward your email so that there was no misunderstanding as to what was required. Then over to you, sir. Can we get your opinion? Well, just 1 minute. The honourable members should have it before them. It's on a parliament document and it's a 3-page document.
Thank you, honourable chair, the honourable members of the committee. I am not going to read the entire document. I will just draw certain important aspects from the opinion that leads to our conclusion. We were requested to advise the committee on whether or not the way species in the Republic in Clause 42 of Working Document Version 17 is vague and offends the rule of law principle, which requires that offences be clearly defined. In our view, the first question really seeks to determine whether the use of the phrase prejudice the Republic in the offence of hostile activity renders the relevant offence so vague such that it offends the principle of legality. The principle of legality embraces different forms or notions of fairness, which includes, amongst others, that definitions of common law and statutory crimes should be reasonably precise and settled. Then move to page 2 of the opinion. We made reference to a constitutional court judgment in the Affordable Medicine Trust and others versus the Minister of Health of RSA and others. We've quoted what the former Chief Justice said. The ultimate question really is whether properly construed Clause 42 indicates with reasonable certainty to those who are bound by it what is required of them. We've looked at the element in question, prejudice the Republic, and we found that although the working document describes or defines hostile activity as well as a non-state actor, that prejudice was not defined. It is our view that prejudice went further than hostile activity. We've looked at different case law that deals with prejudice. However, the cases that we've consulted were confined to fraud and contractual relationships, not necessarily within the context of security matters. And we are mindful that the judgments on those areas might not necessarily be authorities for a different context, namely security context. That is why we've come to the we are not in a position to say with absolute certainty that the court approach to prejudice within the security context will be the same as in instances of fraud and contractual relations. For that reason, we were of the view that greater clarity and certainty could be achieved by expressly limiting the prejudice to either, and I need to just apologize for the grammatical error there in paragraph 12, in is not national insecurity, it is national security. And alternatively, by tabulating specific instances that will qualify as prejudice to the Republic. That is basically our recommendation to the committee. Thank you, sir.
This appears to be a minority judgment, yes, sir.
Chair, when we debated the issue of prejudice, I indicated that I didn't think it needed to be defined, and we did dealt with the case law, and I did suggest we should limit it by adding the words national security, and I think this is useful. Obviously, it backs the position that I suggested. If we were to go that route, I would just suggest that we follow the wording elsewhere in the bill, prejudice, as opposed to saying in its national security, you prejudice the national security of the Republic, you harm the national security of the Republic. So you just put that before as opposed to after it for consistency's sake in drafting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You'll recall that in our earlier submissions, we made the point in respect of hostile activity that either we defined prejudice as in the case of the Canadian jurisdiction, or we altered the wording to read prejudice the national security of the Republic. It seems to me that the legal opinion from the Parliamentary Law Advisors supports our position, and I think we should therefore amend the hostile activity clause to read or prejudice the national security of the Republic. And it seems that there's similar words in your working document.
Honourable members, there is tea, but before we get to tea, there is a put this one in front and put that one at the back. Can that be done? Because there seems there's going to be consensus if that is done. Yes, Honourable Anders. Honourable Smuts.
And this takes care of such a very, very big problem, as I've been saying, it's so fundamental. If we agree and have consensus that we insert the word, not the way they're written here, but prejudice the national security of the Republic, then that danger now disappears, that is held for especially our journalists of being locked up for 20 years. Just as a result of vagueness and illegality in a formulation. So it's a matter of very great relief to us if everybody has reached consensus, and we give our thanks to Mr. Venara, who wrote this opinion at the request of Mr. Mania, and our thanks to you for kindly conveying the request through to the Parliamentary Law Advisor.
Honourable members? Yes, Honourable Lander.
Chair, we welcome Mr. Venara's opinion, and we thank him for it. And we agree that the words should read prejudice to the national security of the Republic. We also acknowledge the fact that in his very last paragraph he says he cannot find grounds upon which the clause can be found to be inconsistent with the Constitution. And we also acknowledge the fact that reference to the Canadian model. It's a very long list of criteria set down there. So we are reminded by the Honourable Steve Swart that notwithstanding the demand for a definition of prejudice, the courts know what prejudice means.
So just one correction, a tiny point. But the Honourable Landers misreads the final paragraph 13. Mr. Mania's second request to Mr. Venara was whether the clause in any other respect was inconsistent with the Constitution. Mr. Bernardo's reply is, considering the short space of time he's had to formulate a view, he could not find the grounds upon this clause could otherwise be found. It was a second question asking, apart from the matter of prejudice, is this thing unconstitutional on any other grounds? He said he's had short time, he couldn't find other grounds.
Honourable members, let's not talk about things that we want. We don't have to talk about. Ms. Boysa, have you been following the debate? This hostile offences story now is going to all prejudice the national security of the Republic, full stop. Can you insert that into the working document as agreed to? And then we are going to adjourn. I'm not sure, you know, because the dinner can be very close. What is the situation? There's tea outside now. I don't want you to drink tea and then you can't eat your dinner.
Frankly, you, I give you my firm and sincere assurance. Having tea outside now will not affect our appetite. If anything, it might enhance it.
Then we will adjourn for tea until 5:45, honorable members, and you will come back here at 5:45.
I myself said yes, that I was convinced we really do need a bill like this law. Does the inherent purpose of the court to take care of the way in which they deal with classified information?
And I also want to support the view.
It would be a referral for an independent committee. What I'm asking is to look at that the law advisory is going to look at that report. It looks on page 45. There's a clause that I picked up there that seems that we also need to consider when it comes to documents before a court. And at 40, at section 19.3, which says the state of classified information must be reviewed when there is a need for a proposal to use that classified info in a public forum such as in a court.
Well, can you identify the document?
Page 45 is our working document. It will come from the law as text. So those words we inserted. So just sub 3. That's right, 19 sub 3. Just to consider what impact that has on our deliberation.
Provided the sole purpose of the subclause is the review. So that in the event a classified time, the thing shouldn't be classified anyway, and can then give it to the court unclassified. That makes life easier. If that's all it means, then it's all right. If the implication, but it's not here concretely, if the implication is that the classified is withheld from the court, then of course it's unacceptable. But so it depends what the source means.
Honourable members, can we deal with the matter at hand? Can we instruct the state law advisor then to look at clause 46?
Would the innovation understand the question whether we would have one at all?
We'll get to that, honourable members. Can you look at that, Ms. Morrison? Can you look at each individual sub-clause and advise us whether those, any of those clauses need to be retained or deleted? Can you also advise us whether we in fact need that clause 46? Can you also look at the rest of the bill whether it's referenced to court and see whether there's any conflict in what you're going to be telling us? Would you particularly look at the last subclause in 46, which deals with a reference to a minimum of 3 judges deciding over any matter in terms of which classified information? Can you calm down on your members, please? Can you look particularly at that clause, whether there is anything wrong describing any matters of where classified information appears before court that at least the judges should be sitting on the matter? And in respect of another matter, you look at the objects clause. Whether they are clauses that need to be deleted. I would imagine that the National Declassification Database will be found there and that clause would be deleted. But equally, one would have to, I would imagine, insert reference to the reviewing panel. Thank you.
pointing out that you should key judges. When I read that the other night, it was great concern to me. You can't bring an urgent application, and while it would be very difficult to bring an urgent application and then require key judges to sit on a full bench. So I think there's definitely a problem with requiring key judges, as it presently states there. It says, at any court hearing relating to this act, include those urgent applications which we make provision for. So I think we need to revisit that. But that, so that would be part of that. What impact that has on the urgent applications that we brought, that we wrote in, which would require a full bench to sit on an urgent application, which is probably unheard of.
Just to take the cleanup of the objects clause further, may I make a few suggestions? I've been doing a run through the film. Firstly, we surely want to reinstate the old J, harmonize the implementation of this Act with the Promotion of Access to Information Act and the National Archives and Records Service Act. Surely we want to reinstate that. Then, Sarna and Susa will find in some clauses F, G, and H, reference to the designation of state information and designated information. That is memory served. It's a relic, a survivor of the previous film. Although even there I didn't find the definition of state information. I think it was the skiller, not reduced to a record. But that presumably must come out. And the other two that I wasn't sure about are C and C is established general principles in terms of which state information may be handled and protected. I'm not sure we deal with the handling, apart from allowing the minister to prescribe it. And F defines the nature and categories of state information which may be protected from destruction, loss, or unlawful disclosure. And I think we just want to be sure that that objective reflects what survives. I'm not sure myself, but I think we want to be sure.
Yes, Honourable Smuts, the reference to designated information had been deleted in somewhere between working document 4 and 5 many months ago. It somehow seemed to have crept its way back into the working document. If you look at your earlier versions, you will see that it has been deleted and we had agreed to delete it. I'm not sure how it worked its way back. It is mentioned a few times in the bill. Can the state law advisor just look at that? But somewhere between a working document 4 and 5, around about May, I think it is, you will find that we had agreed to remove that designated information. Honourable members, are we then in agreement? That is what we will. The state law advisor also seek the assistance of the lawyers and advocates at Parliament, particularly Mr. Nara, in doing the legal opinions, particularly on clause 46 relating to court applications, to the court proceedings. Anything more?
Acknowledging remind me something. I'm correct, am I not, in thinking that a preamble in the sense of a statute in what was once described as a structure-creating exercise, I think by Albert, whereas the preamble in the Constitution has actual force and effect. Am I right?
Something that will help the user of the law to quickly understand when he looks at it what this means and what very often has instructed or informed such a law, such a law to come about. It's very often in the preamble, but historical law, other political issues that has involved at all, that has informed. Jim, on that basis, and come back at 7 on the Thank you.
Civil War, and it speaks over the colleagues' greatness of spirit. And I thank him for this very, very much. But I think it's not necessary, because we must understand one another. We are working hard. We are stressed. I think we are all trying to do the best work we can, the best job we can in what is a difficult job. And it may happen that at times one says things that one does not mean. I've done it many times, and I think we all need to apologize. I really appreciate it. I don't think it was necessary. Thank you very much. I've got full appreciation. Thank you very much. We move on. The St. Louis advisors have been given a number of tosses regarding matters on which we still need to get clarity. There remains one or two matters which I need to draw to your attention, and that is clause 43 in the original book. I think it stands as 52 in the book. It is a matter which the Honorable Smuts has drawn our attention to. You will find it on page 77 of the working document that's required. Page 77. And it's under the heading prohibition of disclosure of a state security matter. It goes on until page 78, the top of page 78. There have been minor adjustments to this code which has been agreed upon, and that is adding state before information, so it's state information. We've also, by agreement, removed the minimum sentence clause itself. Today, I draw your attention that state security matter is also defined. Find that definition on page 18 of your working document, basic document. Your state security message is defined in the definition clause. The other matter which we would refer to by the Honorable Smuts is on page 19 of your working document. And that relates to the conflict of laws. That would be your bracket 3 on page 19, right at the top of the page. I know the one proposal was to retain that clause as it presently stands. There was no
Thank you.
that's what I did here, it's going to be just so. At least I'm half in the dark. What seems to us self-evident is that you can't allow either the classification or the creation of a crime based on exposure of absolutely anything that the agency does, and the definition is incredibly wide. It deals with any dealings they have, anything they do whatsoever. Any matter which is dealt with by the agency, which relates to the functions of the agency, or to the relationship existing between any person and the agency, that is simply too wide. And we can't have can't draw a veil or secrecy over the agency itself when we know that there can be problems. That's why I call it sanctifying. Can we not turn the whole there's nothing to disclose, publish, or retain any information about the agency when we know they are sometimes public. 10 years.
They will behave better.
How about if it's not enough air?
We know that there are sometimes problems in the intelligence services. And the reason why I call it the French Chicanian source is that the Reverend Chicanian, whom I personally greatly admire, has said that there is no newsroom, that there is no greater threat to national security than a corrupt intelligence service. Humanity being what it is, we know that instances of such corruption will occur. Regrettably, we've had rather a complicated intelligence history. And you see, to me, it's even worse than non-intelligent citizens indulging in malfeasance-based discrimination. You can't leave the intelligence services behind the veil of secrecy, where you simply criminalize anybody who publishes, retains, or discloses information about malfeasance inside the agency that comes out of the air. I mean, when people who operate under conditions of secrecy, under a sacred trust, abuse that trust, they are dangerous. And you can't, therefore, say, you can't simply criminalize anybody who exposes such abuse. It would be a terrible, terrible mistake. That's our whole point of departure.
However, that veil of secrecy
why that is the case. You really have a notion. And I'm really this is what they do. They act behind the way of secret. And you're saying this. Why? To what end? To what purpose? To serve. To serve whose objectives? This is a standard clause you find in every country. People who work in the intelligence services understand that. And anything they deal with behind the cloak of secrecy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What they feel that they do do. The Honourable Lambeth said, whatever they do do, they do it under a cloak of secrecy. Let us see what they do do. This morning, the Honourable Anders and I, and other people, were involved in drafting a bill which would soon be enacted, the trafficking bill, in terms of which the state security, the Department of State Security, will issue policies. Will the Panama issue, will be consulted within the process?
It's not true.
Why is it not true?
It's not true.
Should I read it? I'm sorry, terminological shortcut, you're right. I'll be technical. Let's be there. They will exercise the function of being consulted in the process of developing a national framework relating to combating trafficking of people and addressing the plight of victims of the crime of trafficking. So both in terms of law enforcement and to a certain extent social welfare related to it. Now, I think that we agree, and it would be rational, that in respect of this little segment of the things that they do, there is no reason whatsoever to do that under a cloak of secrecy. The other things that they do, they nowadays face a permanent residence application submitted to the Department of Home Affairs on the basis of not a statutory enablement, but in terms of regulation. Again, if there is something else that they do, it doesn't need to be done under a cloak of secrecy because it includes and relates to third parties' rights and expectations. So what is it that we do legitimately think that should be conducted under the clause of secrecy? All that which we have so painstakingly described in clause 13 and 15, all that which must be classified, all that must be secret, must be classified, must be kept secret. And the legislation is there. They can classify it all in terms of the act. So this clause goes beyond that which can be classified. It goes to the other activities that we all have agreed in this room do not require, do not deserve the clause of secrecy. Those activities in which, in terms of the language of section 7 or clause 17, in which the balance between the need of secrecy and the reasons of transparency and open society, and I'm not quoting verbatim, but you're all familiar with the clause, where that balance is in favor of openness and transparency. Because if it is not, they can classify it. And there it goes under the clause of secrecy. So I don't, this is the rationale that in response to Mr. Lander's question, which would suggest that this is anywhere between not necessary and potentially very damaging. If I were the ruling party, I would really want to know what goes on there. Because the greatest threat to the power of the ruling party doesn't come from the election board. It comes from people who utilize state function for their own political purposes. And so perhaps, if I may plead, a lot has been said about it. Perhaps we all need to go home, and we have heard it, perhaps we can listen to it and the solitude of our reflections and think about it.
I may receive the command to concur with the last sentiment, but I was expressly asked for examples of what I would go wrong. And goodness, I mean, one example would be the fact that it is said by people, authorities, like it, that it was police intelligence that leaked the intercept, the text of the conversations between Bulalani. Mr. Zuma, only lawyer. Now, you, in your privileged position, have sat on that report. You know what it is. I don't. And it's unfortunately, when your checks and balances themselves sit behind the veil of secrecy, then I have to have confidence in all of you, but I mean, people don't know what is being got away with. And then, if your example, that is the police intelligence intercepting the heaven help us prosecutorial authority in office and previously in office. And I believe implicitly that sunshine is the best disinfectant. And you cannot simply close off all of the dealings and read again the definition of state security matter. Any matter which is dealt with by the agency or which relates to the function. NIA, the Secret Service, the Comsec, now there's something else, and all the Academy. Any matter which relates to the relationship existing between any person and the agency, it's too wide. You cannot close it off and criminalize any position, disclosure. What you must then do at minimum is write like the Canadian thing, write a PDA for intelligence operatives, where they also have to go through the hierarchy. But failing which, at the top of their hierarchy, is the equivalent of your committee. They must disclose maltreatment, corruption, and abuse up the hierarchical line, and failing which, they must be able to disclose. And I cite to you again what the Canadian Senate said. You always come straight back, whether it's when you said no, but the government of Canada has accepted the Senate recommendation. True. But the Senate recommendation, to me, makes sense. It said it defeats the whole purpose of whistleblowing, of serving justice and defeating corruption, if you close off every avenue for a person, an insider, to disclose malfeasance that is going on. But at the very least, let's then have, if you don't already have in your intelligence laws, a thing where an employee, an operative, can inside the intelligence community report upwards and right up to your committee something, an instance of abuse that is going on. And you have to do at least that. Otherwise you can't criminalize disclosure.
Honourable members, you are now circulating a discussion. And it's becoming increasingly you are
knowledge, and then let me address firstly the matter raised by Sams, where he says the agency should not be getting applications for permanent residence. This also happened in the USA in Manhattan. You don't know. You don't know. Well, for one to be honest.
Tell her a lot of many things are going wrong in the States, and
sure,
you shouldn't really replicate them.
Yes.
Is it your Patriot Act?
No.
Are you involved in the Patriot Act?
No. Just listen. We listen very carefully to you. We noticed the things you said. Chairperson, this is what our Constitution says. Section 199, subsection 5. Security services must act and must teach and require their members to act in accordance with the Constitution and the law, including customary international law and international agreements binding on their part. Subsection 6. Don't murmur. Listen. No member of any. No, if you don't want this to be said in this open forum, simply say that. Say, well, I don't want you to quote this particular subsection. No, you don't want me to quote it. That's why you're interrupting me. Subsection 6 says the following. No member of any security service may obey a manifestly illegal order. Now, it does take care of it, because you see, you are ignorant of what the other legislation provides for. At least in the senior case, he acknowledges he doesn't know what happens in Manhattan, where he has a residence. He doesn't know if the CIA vets applications for permanent residence in the USA. But he would have our intelligence agency not vetting anyone applying for permanent residence in South Africa. So, Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity to at least respond even briefly.
Mr. Chairman, can you briefly
I will be brief. You know, no, just for future reference, let's address the issue. Let's not talk people in a can't address the issue, attack the man. Now, let's play the ball, let's not play the man. And I'll leave it at that, because these are important issues. This is going to be foundation. Many things are going wrong in America. And when I used to practice immigration law there, there was no CIA involvement or Department of Homeland Security involvement in permanent residence application problems. I cannot tell you the way it is now. But in a Reichstag, in a society organized under the rule of law, on the basis of evidence, rights and privileges should be granted or withheld on the basis of evidence, things you can bring to court, not on the basis of secret CIA reports or national intelligence reports, which are not part of the record and are not part of what you can exercise judicial review on. And this is the type of society we need to face. And the difficulty I have is that we can always restrict the spaces of freedom. If we need to, we are under attack, but right now we can grant South Africa the privilege of enjoying a larger space of freedom than America does at this juncture.
Honorable members, seems like yes, off of that very short presentation I'm talking about the senior. Philosophy and the science
then is nothing more that you want to discuss today. You seem to have outdone your staying power, and I feel that if I insist that you stay any longer, this thing might turn out to be ugly. And I therefore am going to say on your remembrance that we will be back in this very venue tomorrow at 2. We will hope that the state law advisor will come and enlighten us with some of their opinions. The house is meant to sit at 3 tomorrow, but it's been changed.